Our next guest, we're going to take a short break from the phones. Our next guest says that the Olympics are having an identity crisis. And David Newland is a singer, a writer, and a musician, but he's also been writing about the Olympics for Maclean's magazine online. And in a recent article, he argues that the Olympics are not amateur games, and that's not what Canadians are tuning in to watch. So, David Newland, welcome to Cross Country Checkup.
Thanks very much for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, we're glad that you're on the line, and you've been probably hearing a lot of people who have been saying some of what you've been saying, that the Olympics no longer look like amateur sports, but others are saying, yes, with the athletes, it really is. Well, is this the identity crisis?
I think so, and I want to say that I think both sides are right in a way. In my article, which was really intended to be a light and humorous one, just points out the tension, I think, between those two points of view. Absolutely. I mean, it's so moving to hear the young gentleman that you just spoke to hear Paula, the athlete you had on earlier, and the mom of the hurdler, you know, talking about everything that goes into committing yourself as an athlete. And that's a noble pursuit and one that I really support. And I think from that point of view, it remains an incredible athletics competition and the pinnacle of years of work for so many individuals. It is also, and I've argued and others have argued, the Olympics is also a spectacle on the grandest scale. And the experience of it for many of us, and I'm as much an armchair observer as anyone else, the experience of it is not that different in many ways from a reality show.
A reality show, because some are saying it's all, I think the phrase we heard, big business now. But how do you go from big business to calling it a reality show?
Well, what I mean by that is not to... you know, I don't want to belabor the point because, again, my take on it is pretty lighthearted. But and people have been pointing fingers at the media. A couple of your callers have, and you know, the media's role is to make sense of something that's as big as this—10,000 athletes and the logistics are beyond the scope of anybody's ability to comprehend. And so the media looks for stories, right? And at the end of the day, at the end of several weeks, what you'll come away with are a few stories. Those stories have in fact sort of emerged from all the possibilities. They've been to some degree crafted so that we can understand them as ordinary people. We can understand. This person overcame this injury, this disease, this heartbreak. This person is not representing a country that exists anymore. All of these sorts of things.
It's a personal connection.
Yeah, and so that kind of storytelling is the sort of thing that a reality show depends on.
Very
you know?
Good.
And that's okay. That's how we consume stories. I do think it's a mistake to look at the Olympics through the hazy filter of the past and think that it is merely a romantic, merely an internationalist amateur competition for the sake of good sport. It's obviously not just that. It doesn't mean all the elements of that are gone, though.
But you say reality show. I'm still not sure I get it, because certainly personal stories has been a storytelling, a manner, method of storytelling for centuries and centuries.
Yes.
Rather than at being a reality show, but I guess you're saying we invest more in these individuals, and that's what makes it more into a super hyper reality?
Yeah, I think so. And you know what, Anne, I'm not going to belabor the reality show comparison.
I know. Yeah.
Because really, I've done that to caricature it and to say, look what we're looking at here, folks. This isn't just a tournament at your local high school. It has, in fact, lost a lot of its innocence. And And in some ways, a comparison to a reality show is a way to sort of shock the reader into just looking at the way it runs now. But it's also not meant to be a harmful comparison. It's a way of saying, these are the things that compel us. What actually compels us, like, for example, if Canada didn't have anyone in rowing, we would not be that interested in the rowing results. Right, and so if we were only into it for the sake of amateur competition and sportsmanship and so forth, perhaps we would only be interested in a very equanimous way in the results. But we're not. We're actually interested in the stories. Through the media, we're able to understand those stories having a beginning and a middle and an end.
But there's still maybe a framework which isn't amateur, whether it's...
It's not,
you know,
really
characteristics
amateur.
Of fairness or whatever, then you say it doesn't add up to amateur.
It doesn't really for a bunch of reasons. I mean, one is that they're obviously in a number of sports professionals, including basketball and tennis. Professionals are competing alongside everybody else. Another is that as a couple of commentators have pointed out, you can kind of predict results by country and by individual based on the GDP of the nation.
Hmm.
So if it were pure amateurism, it would be a truly level playing field. And I don't think it is. That's not to dismiss the greatness of any given athlete. It's a great struggle for anyone, no matter how much support you have. But, you know, the Canadian athletes who work as hard as anyone else, certainly, have the good fortune of being from a first world nation with all kinds of training facilities, and in fact there's now some compensation built into the system, so that's not pure amateurism either. The flip side, which I didn't touch on in my article but I think it's important to say, is even when these games were quote unquote amateur Olympics, they were it was very limited as to who actually had the opportunity to be an amateur. If you're working in a coal mine all day, you don't have the opportunity to become a world champion badminton player. If, on the other hand, you're a member of the British peerage and you don't actually have to turn your hand to making a living, then, okay, you can be an amateur. And so it's got that in its history, too, that's... I wouldn't overplay the romance of amateurism either.
But I love the way you described the tension. I have to ask you the question I'm asking everyone. Will you or have you been watching the Olympics?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen an event yet. I did an article on Friday about watching the opening ceremonies, which is a spectacle on a grander scale than we almost
that's a whole
ever get to see. Yeah, but, you know, I don't... I'm one of those people who's kind of moved beyond the television, and so I'm watching the games peripherally, maybe serendipitously. You know, I work online, so obviously I'm seeing Twitter, and I'm seeing what various websites are talking about. I have the opportunity to stream the thing if I wish to, and I'll dive in and out really based on those stories. And this is why I'm saying it's. It's not an insult to say that it works a bit like a reality show, because it's actually the stories I'm really interested in, and so yeah, I'm not cynical about it. I try to be mindful of, you know, what it's becoming,
right,
and what kind of a behemoth it is. But I'm not going to shut my door, because in fact there's some great stories too. And again, I have so much respect for the athletes, not just from Canada, from the world. These are incredible people, and they're doing things that push the bar up a little bit for all of us,
Indeed,
too.
Indeed they are. David, I thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks
right.
for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was David Newland, who is not only someone who's been writing about the Olympics for Maclean's Magazine Online, he's also a singer, writer, and a musician.